This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Frog populations around the world have been in decline for the past four decades. And many scientists argue that more than any other animal, frogs are the true canary in the coal mine because they're disappearing from seemingly pristine and protected areas. And while we may never recover from that mixed metaphor, there is hope for the environment. Since 2013, a group of artists and scientists around North Carolina have been working together to bring awareness to the decline of frogs and other amphibians in the state. The Disappearing Frog Project will host events in the Triangle and Sandhills over the next few months, including special events with National Geographic photographer and conservationist Robin Moore. Robin recently spearheaded a campaign that sent more than 30 teams into 20 countries in search of amphibians that hadn't been seen for decades. He wrote a book, In Search of Lost Frogs, The Quest to Find the World's Rarest Amphibians, and he joins me in the studio now. Robin Moore, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. Good to be here.
Tell us, give us the big picture. I mean, we're losing frogs at a great rate, and is the 40-year period pretty accurate? That's when we started to notice?
Yeah. So we started to notice at the end of the 1980s, really. A very iconic species, the golden toad, disappeared from the rainforest of Costa Rica in a protected area. And that was late 80s. And there was a big conference in 1989 that just right after that, where a lot of herpetologists, people who study reptiles and amphibians, came together and started swapping stories. And you know, it was before the internet, so people weren't aware really of what was going on elsewhere until they actually came together in person. And suddenly, in the hallways, they're going, "Well, my, you know, study frogs have disappeared too." So they suddenly realized that this global phenomenon was happening, that frogs were disappearing.
But what's important in this is something you said in just a second ago. These are protected areas. These are pristine areas. So it's not like we should have expected it. There's not a lot of pollution, maybe not even a lot of development, right?
Yeah. I mean, it challenged the whole idea of right. What conservation is. You know, setting aside an area may not be enough in some cases.
So now they're putting their heads together and they're coming up with what kind of answers in terms of what's happening? Any guesses?
Yeah, I mean, so it's really, in many cases, a lethal cocktail of threats. But a large one that emerged about 10 years after that they actually identified was this fungus called the chytrid fungus that actually swept through many of these environments, just causing massive die-offs and even extinction of species.
Now, that sounds like a kind of a natural cause. I feel a little bit off the hook now, right? It's not my fault.
Well,
this is happening.
It's not natural for a disease to kill its hosts. It's not usually in the interest of a disease to kill its hosts. And so while the disease may have been around for a while, it's suddenly spreading into new areas as a result of things just moving around at a greater pace and further than ever before.
Ah, so it is our fault. Tell us now about the implications then for sort of human intervention and what role we may play in the rapid spread of these kinds of diseases.
Yeah, I mean, it is our fault. And it also, it's interacting with things like climate change. It's really changing the whole dynamics. So habitat loss as well as a major issue that's just putting more pressure on many of these species.
And what does that mean for us? I know I use the frogs as canary in the coal mine. I could barely get it out.
Yeah.
The frogs and the canaries in the same mine. It was a horrible picture. But why are they important? I mean, how
sure.
illustrative of the bigger picture, and how much danger does it mean we're
yeah.
in?
Well, first of all, I mean, frogs are said to be indicators of ecosystem health. So a thriving, healthy frog population is an indication that you've got clean, fresh water, that your forests are healthy, because they form that link between the water and the land. So if you have pollution in the water, it's going to affect the frogs. So that's one aspect of it. They're kind of a litmus test. But also their disappearance has implications because they are regulating many things that we don't like. Mosquitoes, crop pests. You know, if you want to keep these things at bay, we need these natural predators of these.
Unless you happen to produce chemical insecticides, and then maybe you don't.
Well,
to be a
cynic. That's part of the problem.
Well, but so that's I mean, it's an interesting point that you make. Not only is it an indication of a degraded environment, but also the loss of them then accelerates that degradation. It hurts us once we start to lose.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle. And you know, I would ask anyone. I mean, do you want to live in a place and drink the water where frogs are dying? I mean, to me, that's an indication that something is not healthy there.
So tell us about your idea, this idea for the Disappearing Frog Project. What is it and where did the idea come from?
Okay. Well, first of all, I'll make it clear that the Disappearing Frog Project wasn't my idea. It was actually spearheaded by an artist in Charlotte, Terry Therion. And it was really an attempt to use art to convey the science in a engaging way and in a more emotional way that people would be able to connect with. And I think art has a huge role to play in that.
And then In Search of Lost Frogs was something that you initiated as a result of that. Am I right?
So The Search for Lost Frogs, that happened before, but they invited me to come down and speak last year at the Disappearing Frogs Project, and we formed a partnership.
And how does that work? This is an idea of bringing science and art together to bring more attention to the problem, right?
Exactly. So there's more than 30 partners now in the Disappearing Frogs Project. So it really is a collaborative effort.
And how does it look? What's the project? How does it shape?
It's 90 days of art events. There's 5 different art exhibits, talks, presentations. There was a film night. Really, 90 days of frogs, amphibians.
But what's the art part of it? I mean, are we just illustrating frogs, taking pictures of them, or what? In what other ways are they artistically rendered?
Yeah, our artists and public are actually invited to submit their own artwork around the subject. So I know last year there was 200 original works of art being featured by 100 artists, and this year even more.
Let's talk about some of the particulars too. Some of the species, because there's good news in all of this that there are recovering species. I guess one of the success stories is the variable harlequin frog.
Yeah,
tell us about that.
Yes, I mean,
I had not heard of that frog till you came on this program.
Yeah, so not many people have. Yeah. But you're welcome. I hope it has enriched your
life.
Is it
as funny as it sounds? If it's a harlequin frog, it must be hilarious.
I mean, it's not as funny as it sounds, but it is very beautiful. Yeah. It's a beautiful frog.
So where is it found? And tell us about this. I think it's a success story, right?
So many of these frogs disappeared in the 80s and 90s, and the variable harlequin frog reappeared in 2003, where it was thought to have gone extinct. So it was an indication that all those that we thought had gone may actually... There may be some survivors.
And why do we think they came back?
Well, that's a very good question. And the search for lost frogs was really an attempt to find out how many of these might be there and what they could be telling us. And so there's a lot of research now trying to find out what sets that apart. Is it something genetic? Is it something to do with the habitat, the environment that makes it able to survive? Because it's surviving with the fungus. So we're trying to now figure out how we can take what we understand from there and apply it to other species.
Well, I'm joined now by Jeff Bean. He is a herpetology collections manager for the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Jeff, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thanks, Frank. Glad to be here.
Robin's been giving us the global picture. What's the story here in North Carolina?
The picture here in North Carolina is a little better off than some other places in the world. We have 31 species of frogs documented from the state historically. We believe we've lost one of them, the river frog. It's a species that's associated with blackwater rivers in the southeastern part of the state, and it hasn't been seen since 1975. And we have a few other species that are doing poorly. Here the habitat loss is the big problem. Frogs don't do well on pavement, and North Carolina's being paved over at a crazy rate. Mm. Most of our generalist species are still doing pretty well, like the bullfrog, the green frog, Fowler's toad, the southern toad. The green tree frog and the squirrel tree frog are actually expanding their range in North Carolina. But we do have a few species here that are in big trouble.
Well, you've been involved in the Disappearing Frogs Project in this state. Tell us about some of the state-based initiatives to help protect habitat.
There are a lot of groups that are... The big key is habitat protection, and groups like the Nature Conservancy and local land trusts and some of our state and federal agencies are working hard to purchase habitat and protect it and to restore some of the breeding habitats that have been lost for various species in the state.
You've talked about some species that are actually growing in numbers. I mean, is that a sign that they're filling the niche, or is there another reason for that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons. The green tree frog in particular is primarily a coastal plain species, and it's been expanding its range into the Piedmont lately, partly because it's a good hitchhiker. They sometimes hitch rides on vehicles and boats, but mostly because there are a variety of wetland types that were not in the Piedmont historically. There's no natural lakes in the Piedmont in North Carolina, but there are a lot of artificial impoundments now and farm ponds, and a lot of beaver wetlands that were not here historically. Beavers were extirpated from North Carolina. Then they were reintroduced. The thinking is that the beavers that were brought in have a tendency to build deeper ponds now and cut more because they were from northern populations and they're genetically wired to do that.
So. We should never have let the northerners down here.
Right.
That was the problem. But tell me more about that.
So green tree frogs like those kinds of wetlands that are being constructed in the Piedmont. Yeah. And they also do well with some of the introduced plants that are bad for other species but good for them. They're fish tolerant as far as tree frogs go. Most tree frogs don't tolerate fish and they need ephemeral or temporary wetlands to breed in.
So, Robert, it does sound like there's a lot of hope in all of this message, that the research is being done, bringing artists in on it to sort of raise awareness. What are the implications beyond preserving amphibians and frogs for preserving habitat and, you know, saving the environment? Is this the kind of research that has broader implications, or are we just mostly talking about frogs and reptiles here?
No, it definitely has broader implications. And I think when we talk about saving frogs, we're really talking about saving the ecosystems that they need to survive and that they're helping support. So it definitely has broader implications. We're talking about protecting habitats, essentially, is the main strategy. And I think, you know, there's more awareness, more consciousness now than there ever has been. So that's really positive that people are really sort of rallying behind it.
I know you're involved in a photography project in Haiti right now. Is art involved in that? And do you see sort of materially how it's helping, or is it?
Yeah, so I've been going to Haiti since 2007, and I set up a program with kids, with youth there, giving them cameras and getting them to tell stories about their daily lives and how that connects with fresh water, with charcoal, just to really, rather than me going and telling them, this is what you need to be doing, getting them thinking about these things, how everything is related, because ultimately it's not a case of saving the frogs at the expense of the people.
You talk about charcoal, that's a big industry, and that means cutting down trees, making charcoal, which is a fuel, and so it becomes a real tension in a place where poverty is as grinding as it is.
Exactly. So you can't go and tell them to stop making charcoal, but you can get them thinking about it and get them thinking about alternatives and provide support for those alternatives when they buy into the idea. So it's more about just... yeah, getting that sort of the message across that everything here is related. And the environment is really inextricably linked to our own well-being.
Thank you both for being on the program. Robin Moore is a photographer and conservation biologist who authored the book In Search of Lost Frogs, The Quest to Find the World's Rarest Amphibians. Robin, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much.
And also Jeff Bean, a herpetology collections manager at the North Carolina Museum of Natural Sciences. Jeff, thank you.
Thank you.
You can hear Robin speak at the North Carolina University Craft Center tonight, 6 o'clock. We have information about that at our website, stateofthings.org.